This is our employee equity addendum extreme nerd out. And I kind of feel like we should be putting it out there because it's information that's a little hard to find. And if this is stuff you're considering, knowing really what like the full picture, I think, can be really useful. But we're splitting this off so that the episode isn't 5 hours long, and we're kind of sequestering this most nerdy part. John, you're going to talk us through repurchase rights.
Okay. So this, again, is after the grant of equity has been completed and the employee has become partner or has some incentive. What happens if the relationship ends? And I'm going to talk about it mostly in the context of like an LLC type, you know, issuance of a profits interest. They show up a little bit differently, but you have the same concepts and situations in like a stock option plan that could be issued for a corporation. So plan or even one-offs. The idea is what happens if the employee is no longer participating in the company. What the repurchase right says is if one of those situations occur, the company, sometimes the owner, sometimes first one, then the other, has the right to buy the shares back from the employee. And that includes vested shares. So like even though there's a vesting concept, the employee has those shares, they are entitled to them. We're talking about buying those shares back potentially. So that's the repurchase transaction. It's the buy and sell, and there's a purchase price. So one question is, how do you determine what we'll talk about what the triggers are, but like question is, how do you determine the purchase price is number one.
Like, do you have to do a whole valuation?
It depends. Like, and so you can have agreements where if the purchase price is based on fair market value or a discount to fair market value of the company, how do you determine that? Do you need to hire an appraiser? Do you have a formula built into the agreement that says, Right. Here's the formula we're going to use? Or do you just base it on some sort of book value type valuation?
What do you think people should do? Because if you have to go to get an outside evaluator, that's like a $10,000 expense.
It could be expensive. Sometimes we write them that way, though, knowing that what that really is meaning is that there's going to be some negotiation over price at the time the exit occurs. Sometimes people just agree, here's what the, from year to year, here's what the number's going to be. You know, every year they look at what their performance was and they say, you know what, if one of these events occurs next year, it's just a number. Huh. And that's very straightforward, so long as people actually do it.
The risk of that is that you forget to do it one year.
You forget to do it, and then you have this like old one that's out there that's still in effect. It's not the worst thing in the world. Yeah. At least you have something. But again, you don't know which way that's going to cut. And the book value thing, that is obviously the most simple. But for a lot of businesses, that doesn't make sense.
Why not?
It could be really beneficial to the company because it means that you're buying the shares back at something that's very low relative to the value of the company. If you just aren't that kind of asset-based business.
But also book value and cash flow are very different things. So,
yeah. So the answer is, like all of the things we've been talking about, depends on the context and what kind of business it is. So now we have some way of determining the value of the company. Then the question is, like, what are the triggers for why this might happen? And then what is the price? Is it always the same? Does it vary? So, for example, you have a category.
Well, what if I get fired? Do I still get to?
Well, let's not get there. That one's okay. More complicated. Let's start with the easy ones first.
Yeah, fine.
Let's start with the easy ones first. The easy ones are something happens to the employee. They die. They become disabled. So mm-hmm. they can obviously no longer participate in the company. Mm-hmm. First of all, you pretty much know if it happens. Death for sure. Disability, you can, you know, define it. So then the question is, you know, what do they get for it? I mean, this isn't somebody who did anything intentionally bad, right? So right. Do you pay the full fair market value? Do you pay some discount to the fair market value? And I'm just going to say there's no right or wrong answer on any of this stuff. There's a continuum.
You know, I mean, the death case, that's shares going to whoever's benefiting from the estate of the deceased. The disability thing, though, I mean, they might still be able to, you know, like you don't necessarily need to kick them out, do you?
let's say it's permanent disability.
Okay.
Meaning they can't work anymore.
Yeah. You're not going to have partners that are not able to participate in the ongoing concern of the company.
I mean, that's the idea here. We're not talking about enterprises. We're talking about small businesses that are closely held.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
By contrast, if your trigger event is quote unquote cause, right?
Yep.
You know, that's a whole separate discussion of what constitutes cause.
We don't have to go in there. You did a bad thing.
So if you did a bad thing, then the question is, what should the purchase price be? And I've seen people take very wide-ranging positions on that. Because some people are like, and I don't disagree with this necessarily, is, you know, you did a bad thing. You hurt my company. You essentially forfeit your shares.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I've seen everything from, you know, like a dollar, just so there's some consideration.
Yeah.
25%, 50%.
That can become a real fight, though, if there's something to argue about.
You're definitely going to have potential fight litigation over was there cause.
But that might happen no matter what your structure is, right?
And it's certainly not going to matter if the payout is $1 or 25% or 50. Like, it's going to happen regardless. But again, you're like thinking about a document. You're thinking about either an option plan or an operating agreement that's actually like identifying these different withdrawal events and showing what the purchase price is for each of them. So you have sort of the involuntary, you have the bad act stuff, you have voluntary termination by the employee.
This actually mirrors what we talked about in the partnership divorce. It's a little bit different because you're actually structuring it for a specific type of equity partner. But it's the same, right?
Yeah, it's exactly what we talked about because you're talking about somebody, however they became a partner, they're a partner.
If you already had a partnership, you probably already have stipulations about what we're talking about, like death, disability, cause, involuntary, blah, blah, blah. Would you create a second, separate, kind of slightly different one, or would you just fold the employees that are becoming, that are receiving equity into the original structure?
If the original is good, you could just have the employee sign on to the operating agreement, and that by becoming a member, they're subject to all of that. That said, sometimes I will have some specific provisions that relate to repurchase for employees who are becoming partner in that context. So sometimes the definition of cause might be different, right? Might be a little more expansive if you're talking about somebody like that as opposed to one of the founders. And your purchase price might be different. There also might be circumstances where it's not covered in the operating agreement and you want it to be covered for these people. And here's the other thing, like there may be a small partnership that started the business and those founders agreed, well, we don't have the right to terminate the others without cause, right? But in the context of making somebody a partner, you may still reserve that right. It can go either way. You know, sometimes when people make partner, they sort of vest into only being terminated. Yeah,
you get tenure.
Right. But a lot of times that's not true. It's that, no, we could still terminate you. It's just that there's going to be a financial consequence. We'll have to pay you more money when we repurchase your shares.
Yeah.
So that's probably not in that first operating agreement. So you have to fold that into the grant agreement or whatever agreement the employee is signing. So you may have documentation, two pieces.
I would think like if I were going to think through this, that decision about kind of like how, like if you were going to approach and bring an employee in as a full partner, you probably don't want to create this separate, like, well, I can fire you, but you can't fire me thing. Like I could see how that would lead to like some asymmetries that would not be productive long term. Yeah. Whereas if like, you know, you're setting something up where somebody's getting a very tiny percentage, you're still holding decision-making power, blah, 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 blah. Like this would actually probably make sense.
Yes. And the other thing I want to say is there's a sort of third piece that could happen with termination without cause, which is that you get to keep your stock, even though you're no longer participating. Like, and that could actually be true in any of these cases.
Yeah.
But again, in our closely held company context, you want everybody participating, but you know, it could be that they get to keep it. And I will just note that this is one of those drafting things that I don't see in operating agreements a lot, is that this is just not addressed.
And interesting.
Then, yeah. And then you have somebody who flakes on the company or stops doing their work or whatever, and there's no mechanism for maintaining that closely held partnership where everybody's involved.
It's a great way to have some really intense resentment.
Yeah. And it's a leverage issue,
yeah.
You know, for the person who's leaving, totally. If you want to try to buy them out.
They can Bartleby you.
Yep.
Not cute. All right. That's a good little addendum. Thanks, John. See you next time.
Bye, Kate.
Thanks for listening to this bonus, extra nerdy episode of Whiskey Fridays. While we know not everyone needs to know about this stuff, we're experimenting with putting more technical info out there and would love to know what you think. If you have thoughts, feedback, drop us a line at podcast@wanderwellconsulting.com. I'm Kate Tyson. Find me at wanderwellconsulting.com. And John Garber is the lawyer extraordinaire dropping all the wisdom today. You can find him at unlawyer.com. Talk to you next time. Music this week by the one and only Dan Matz, my former roommate.